to Undercard Supercast, number Chris Cooley. I am your host, founder, editor, and Vogo wrapping paper sale enthusiast of Undercard Superstar, Luke Irwin. Joining me tonight, he has 14 more punch holes in his plywood walls after Monday's show, Ben Cohn. He's reaching out, watching me, watching you, Connor Dillon. You like Huey Lewis in the news, Dan Galvan? The early stuff was a little too new wave for me, but when 1983 they came out with sports. He's a fan joining us from underneath a chandelier that is going to fall at any minute in his home, Earl Montclair. He's a fan of all things Astros, Texans, Redskins, and crushing dark depression, Josh Hall. And finally, he came in like a wrecking ball, Nolan Howell. Boys, lots to cover today. Let's waste not, want not. Dateline, Quebec City, Quebec, future home of the Florida Panthers. Friday, George St. Pierre will hold a press conference in the land of Samuel de Champlain to comment on his future. Without any wild speculation, what's your best guess for what GSP's announcement is going to be, Connor?
You know, honestly, I feel like it's going to be he's going to come back in 4 or 5 months and throw down with Johnny Hendricks and beat him.
What does Hendricks do in the meantime?
Hendricks is going to whine and play the heel up a lot.
Daniel?
I don't think we're going to get any clarification. From what I heard, this conference was like set in stone beforehand. Like it's just supposed to be for the press. It's in some random mall. And George St. Pierre isn't the guy that just comes out and announces things. So he's probably going to say something that's going to lead to some stupid TMZ article. But if he has any sense, he'll do what's best for his career. And he'll announce that he's going to begin a new career as a writer for Undercard Superstar.
He'd be ranked lower than Nolan Howell in the junior partner scale, I will tell you that much. But we could use another French-speaking man. Earl?
I was kind of bummed because you said without any wild speculation, because quite honestly, that's all I have.
But, aliens? Nothing wild about that.
No, I have a list of things that it potentially could be. But what I do have is that, I mean, I kind of think that it's going to be you know, he's got to take an extended leave, and at this rate, I wouldn't be surprised if he vacated the belt and went and handled his business, because it seems serious and it seems like it's stuff that really needs to be taken care of. So I wouldn't be that surprised if he wouldn't drop the belt.
Josh,
I mean, all this is a promotional appearance. It's not going to be much of an announcement of anything. It's being blown up because of the result of his last fight and his hiatus right now, but we're not going to hear much from him, I don't think, at this. He's going to go do his whatever he had signed on for long before any of this ever started, and he'll make a couple of comments, and everybody will continue to speculate. I mean, I think we'll end up seeing him in the cage again at some point, but he wants a break right now, and it's going to come down to him and Dana talking that out, because Dana's already said he just had, you know, a year off for his ACL. He can't take another break right now. But if GSP says he's taking a break, then GSP takes a break. I mean, they're not going to strip him.
Nice sweater, Freddy Krueger. Nolan?
Damn right it is.
GSP is coming out with ice cream bars or hemorrhoid cream. I don't know, man. I'm curious to see. I hope he drops a bombshell on Dana, because the way Dana acted in response to to his retirement or a leave of absence was absolutely awful. So we'll see. I'm as curious as anyone else. I see a title drop, or he's talking about how he has no memory of what happened between now and the title fight because of missing time.
Could see that. I kind of agree with Earl, and I don't think we're going to hear much. Some time off, and GSP seems like the kind of guy, he's not obsessed with the title belt, so he could forfeit it for the betterment of the organization, just to kind of, you know, even though, man, I would love to hear some sort of, he's breaking off from the UFC and starting his own promotion with, again, that anonymous Yakuza Yen donation just to try to take Dana White down, because Karma's got some serious collecting to do on that asshole.
he's going to 1FC to fight Ben Askren, and he wants to test himself.
Oh, my God, yes. Ben, nice name tag, by the way.
Thanks. Anyway, what I think I think that he's not – like Josh said, it's not going to be anything crazy. However, I do think he's going to comment on it. But I think he's going to say what he said basically before, but what basically has been said. I think he'll say, I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to come back and I'm going to defend my belt. I don't think he's retiring. I don't think he's going to say, fuck you to Dana. I don't think anything like that's going to happen. I think he's just going to say, I'm taking some time off, but I'm coming back to defend my belt and beat Johnny Hendricks. That's all it's going to say. Yeah.
Can I just read one of my selections of wild speculation?
My God, please.
He made a romance rhythm baby inside Ariane Celeste, and that explains Dana's post-168 tirade.
That would be good. That would be good. I would probably wager Ariane more than Brittany, because I imagine the amount of local anesthesia Brittany's been put under for the last 6 months would be incapable of surviving any sort of childbirth.
There's
a lot of plastic surgery is what I'm saying, Ben.
Mm-hmm. I got it.
All right. All right. it's starting off great. Dateline, Las Vegas, Nevada, home of the Tough House that will be occupied by 16 female strawweights in May. The UFC announced the absorption of 11 Invicta fighters and 5 more that will be added by a tryout. Who is your pick to win the whole damn thing? Connor?
Mainly just to piss off Nolan here, but Beck Hyatt. I think that she didn't have as many issues as I thought she was going to have with the title fight that she got last year or earlier this year. I can't remember. And I feel like once she goes into a house like that, and depending on the coaches and the team, I think that'll help shore up any game issues that she has. And essentially, we're going to be watching a freaking Pride Grand Prix over the course of 6 weeks or so, you know. So I'm really pumped for that. And I think Beck Hyatt, consider all things considered, like, I think she's got just the heart and the determination to go that 6 weeks and go ape shit and learn a bunch of stuff and improve and win the title, or at least get the title fight at the end of the season.
Dan?
I think the two favorites are clearly Carla Esparza and Tecia Torres. The other fighter, obviously, is Claudia Gadella or whatever her name is. The issue with Claudia I have on the show is she was just hospitalized for cutting the strawweight, and now she has to do it 3 times in a short period of time.
She was hospitalized for bacterial infection.
The day that she cut weight, I heard it was – I mean, it was the day she cut weight, you know.
Yeah, but it wasn't like it was a kidney problem or something. You can get an infection in the process of cutting without doing any permanent damage and having it be a recurring issue.
Is it possible she ate some bad cheese?
Definitely.
But she might have gone and had sushi with Alessia Sakara, for all we know.
But the dark horse that I like in this tournament is Joanne Calderwood, because from a pure striking standpoint, there is no fighter in this division that is close to Calderwood. The one issue I have with her is how aggressive she is. She fought a close fight against Katya Kankanpa or whatever because of how hesitant she was. She was a counter striker, but if she just goes all out, she can blitz through people. I mean, her striking is really tremendous, so she's my dark horse pick.
Earl?
Actually, I have Calderwood winning the whole thing in my book. I think that with so much on the line and the structure of, you know, the show and everything else, there's nothing better in this instant than getting it done, just quick and dirty, getting it over with. And if she can go ahead and take care of that, I think she's got it wrapped.
Josh?
I actually think that Tecia Torres is the clear favorite in this tournament because she's got a 3-0 record against the girls in the house already. She has a total of 4 pro fights and has already beaten 3 of the people in the house. She's improving exponentially every time she gets in there. And if she has a chance to actually work with some really, really top coaches and diversify herself a little bit more, she's already working with a good camp, I believe. But you're going to get to work with some different people, round out your skill set. And as young as she is in the sport, then she's going to improve by leaps and bounds on the show, and she could be just running through people, winning lopsided decisions every fight, and it wouldn't surprise me.
If I had to actually put money on it, Carla Esparza has something that not a lot of women in that house do, which is exceptional wrestling, which is usually the clear path to victory. But there are so many young up-and-comers that with 5 months almost to train on and try to improve, you know, Joanne Calderwood uses – and she's originally a professional Muay Thai fighter. She uses her length and distance better than just about – you know, probably she's in the top 2% of all fighters on how to use push kicks, front kicks, right? Just how to – just to use technical striking to her advantage, keep distance, and make it count. And even by her own admission, she hasn't really, you know, gotten out of first or first gear, and that she could really take it to someone, but she hasn't really needed to. She's fought cautiously. And I think with 5 months training, you know, if she gets in a camp somewhere, does a little ground stuff, she, you know, there's nobody in the entire – Torres is a nasty striker, but she's not as technical as Calderwood. And Joanne Calderwood keeps a very, very relaxed on, you know, she doesn't panic. She keeps a very cool demeanor in the cage and wouldn't get wrapped up in anything like that. I could see Calderwood. Torres has just been a monster. But if I had to put money, I just think Esparza is just too good with the wrestling at this stage in the game to really to overlook her yet. Nolan?
Yeah, I like Esparza myself. She seems to be very injury prone, and that tends to come from a grappling background, especially wrestling. But I think the wrestling is just edges over everyone is way too much. I think she'll take it all. But should she get injured, which is a very good probability, unfortunately, I would probably have to go Calderwood as well. It would come down to Calderwood or Torres, in my opinion.
Benjamin?
I would have to say I agree with you guys about the Esparza fight.
Phone!
Sorry. I agree with you about Esparza.
I got it, Ben.
I think that she can win this with her wrestling. Also, the fact that she's a wrestler, she'll be used to cutting weight more than a bunch of the other girls. So that won't be as much of an issue for her, and I think that's a huge advantage in the tough house. Have we seen horrible weight cuts just screw over guys who are much better fighters than the show on the house? So there's that. But like Nolan said, the injuries could be a problem. So if I had to pick a second place or a dark horse, I'm actually going to go with Tisha Torres because Joanne Calderwood's cautiousness, like you said, she's never getting out of first gear, but against a girl like Torres, who is always out of first gear, she's in the number one, she's always in top gear. She, against someone like that, you never know what can happen. Even though she may not be as technical, that aggression and kind of violent streak can really, really put some hurting on her.
Also, dark horse candidate for an injury replacement, Michelle Watterson with an extra 10 pounds of muscle. Get hype. Dateline? I want to see where exactly that they are here. Dateline, Rockaway Park, New York, home of the Boxing Writers Association of America, who came out with their list of 10 finalists for the Boxer of the Year Award. Now, there really is only one big fight left, which is Adrian Broner and Marcos Maidana. While Adrian Broner may be my favorite human of all time, that really is not going to affect his standing as far as Boxer of the Year. Grantland's Eric Raskin wrote an article saying that it was a three-horse race in his opinion. You can probably guess the three, but I will give you the 10 that are listed. Sergey Kovalev, Gennady Golovkin, Mikey Garcia, Danny Garcia, Timothy Bradley, Guillermo Rigondeau, Floyd Mayweather, Adonis Stevenson, and Ruslan Provodnikov. Raskin claims that it will come down to Stevenson, Mayweather, or Bradley. Connor Dillon, who's your pick for Boxer of the Year?
Out of those three, which is probably who I think it would break down to, like, everyone else notices that whenever people have votes, they either A, go with the clear favorite, and in this case, it would be Mayweather out of those three, or they go with, like, the weird, trying to be esoteric kind of BS which I think out of those would probably be Bradley. So I feel like at the end of the day, they're going to wind up voting probably Mayweather as the boxer of the year. I really liked a lot of the – I hate Mayweather so much. But I did enjoy his fight with Canelo. And it got a lot of people pumped that I don't usually talk to combat sports about. So I think I think that was a really interesting thing about that.
So, I can't imagine why Conor hates Mayweather. I just can't think of one reason.
Maybe it was because he's rich. Wife.
He pulled that swerve on you. He set you up and then kicked you in the teeth, my friend. He just vetoed you.
Ben, in fairness, he didn't have a choice out of those three.
I have no clue what you mean by that, Nolan.
Connor's vote for the 12th year in a row, Kelly Pavlik. Dan?
Yeah, I think Floyd Mayweather's kind of the clear guy just because he actually went out and beat some of the top fighters in his division. The win over Alvarez kind of doesn't look as impressive after Trout just got handled by Lara. And, you know, who's Canelo really? I mean, Canelo, to me, it'd be great to see him fight somebody that his promoters don't hype up and to see where he stacks. So that loss, that win kind of has been deflated, but the one guy I really like out of the pool, and it's kind of like I like the under the radar, doesn't get the notoriety, is Guillermo Rigondeaux. Is he boring as hell? Absolutely. But the win over Nonito to me was just, A, it was impressive how dominant he was, and B, it was impressive to beat one of the top guys, if not the top guy in the division at the time. His latest win over Agbeko was boring. Agbeko, you know, he's not one of the premier fighters in the division. But when you look at Bradley, whose wins are, like, extremely close, I like Guillermo in this one.
Nobody can get hit in the balls quite like Joseph Agbeko.
He got neutered.
Earl?
For me, just kind of – and I'm kind of basing mine on just really a big factor is just the amount of fights taken in this thing, which is why I'm going with Adonis Stevenson. I feel like, you know, he was far more active, the most active guy. And I just feel like the quality of those wins, while even some of them aren't that amazing, the fact that he stayed busy, came out, won everything, and has, you know, shown what he has over the course of this year, I feel like that he should deserve the nod. And, I mean, Mayweather's going to get it, but I don't, you know, what are you going to do?
The money team. Josh Hall? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the volume vote worked out well for Donaire last year. He won it last year, right, with
yes.
Going 4-0. But I don't think Stevenson is going to win it this year. He just doesn't have that marquee win. I mean, I guess his best win this year was probably Chad Dawson, which is a good win, but it's not a mind-blowing, like, knock-your-socks-off win. And then his two title defenses were against guys who were ranked 6 and 7 in the world. He didn't even fight top five guys defending his belt. I think you have to go with Floyd. I mean, I just don't see an option that's – I mean, Bradley's had a great year, but Floyd just – he owns top competition, and I don't think you can understate that. I almost prefer Golovkin if you're going volume, you know, having four wins, but his four wins aren't as good as the ones that we saw from Stevenson. So I think it has to be Floyd just by process of elimination.
If Rigondeaux had more than two fights this year, I would give it to him. If he had three wins or he just – I mean, Nonito was probably like a top three, definitely a top five pound-for-pound fighter when he waxed him. He basically shut down an entire broadcast channel because nobody wanted Rigondeaux and Nonito was tainted.
He ran out the arena too. Like, people were leaving before the main event. I've never seen that. The guy's an undefeated champion, and people are leaving because they know what's going to happen and have no interest in seeing it. That's not good.
You really have to appreciate the sport. I mean, like I said, if you take styles out of the equation, just look at on paper results. Beating Nonito Donaire is amazing. Just dominating him is unheard of. But only two fights and a win over Agbeko is nice, but it's not, you know.
Marish or Santa Cruz or someone on that level that I think could really propel him. I choose to look at this award in a bigger sense, more of like who – when you look back on boxing in 2013, what will you remember? You'll probably remember Alvarez and Mayweather. It was almost the biggest, you know, pay-per-view event in history. But to me, 2013 is the year of Adonis Stevenson. He went from relative nobody to the undisputed light heavyweight champion of the world, knocked out Chad Dawson in the first round. In the first round, this is the same Chad Dawson who beat Bernard Hopkins to become and remain the number one light heavyweight in the world. The Stevenson has four wins, which is more than – he's nobody – no other fighter on the ballot has more than three. And yeah, the quality, I guess we're not, you know, out – we're not Saul Alvarez worthy or, you know, or Bradley beating Marquez, but it's still – he took the number one in the world crown away, did it in thunderous fashion. And then Tavoris Cloud and Tony Bellew are still competent challengers. He's not taking mandatory fights against, you know, the Senchenko brothers. I mean, this is – I really think that 2013 is the year of Adonis Stevenson, and he should be rewarded for it. So pulling for you, pimp. Ben? Nolan?
Yeah, you don't want Ben to talk about boxing.
I really don't. Silly.
No.
I think Apollo Creed.
Stevenson suffers from a lack of competition in the sense that he hasn't really fought anybody this year. I too look at Rigondeaux vote from Dan Galvan. I like also Danny Garcia after dismantling Lucas Matisse, your boy, Luke. I like the Rigondeaux vote. I'm not really sold on Stevenson yet. The Chad Dawson win's a great win, but and he's fighting competent talent, but still he's looked less impressive in every single one. I mean, he's showing new facets to his game, but at the same time, it's just something that doesn't really impress me. Honestly, I had to go with Mayweather fighting Canelo. De facto gets that. I do love the Bradley vote after having a fight of the year candidate and also beating Juan Manuel Marquez handily in a fight that many thought he wouldn't have a chance in. So if you take Canelo out of the equation, I would say Bradley, but obviously it's going to be Pretty Boy Floyd.
Benjamin.
Well, as everyone has already said, you know, most people are going to – it's most likely going to go to Floyd. The problem with that is, you know, aside from nearly setting a new record for pay-per-view, you know, he's only had – you know, he's had two fights. But I would actually, like Nolan mentioned, give it to Bradley. You know, he came off that split in 2012. He's coming off the split decision over Pacquiao. A lot of people say, most people, everyone basically says that Pacquiao won that fight. So he comes in, has a fight of the year with Ruslan Plavnikov, and wins that and shows everyone that he is a really, really, he is that damn good. And then he did, like he said, he beats Marquez. I actually think he kind of deserves it because he went out after losing respect for winning a split decision over Pacquiao that he didn't deserve, and took all that respect back in two fights. He gained every bit of respect that he lost from that fight back. There's no way you can take that away from him. And I think that should actually make him the fighter of the year, because he took – not only did he win his fights and win the really great fights, and he looked fantastic doing that, he gained something that none of the others had to gain. He gained his respect back from the fans. And I think that's very important.
That's a good point. The knock on Bradley, which Eric Raskin pointed out, and it's a really good article, you should check it out,
sure.
Is that both of Bradley's wins could be disputed.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought he handedly took Marquez, but
yeah.
There are those who thought that Marquez took it, and there are a lot of people who thought Provodnikov took it over Bradley. That is – I mean, I like the wins over Marquez, especially, you know, Marquez these days, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
Marquez and Provodnikov over Alvarez and Guerrero, which looks like a horrible that's going to, you know, history will show us where Canelo ends up.
Yeah.
But he's not trending well. But again, you got to, you know, they were dominant performances by Mayweather, and I think you have to kind of take that into effect. Or I know the writers will for a fact.
For sure. I think it'll go to Mayweather. I just think that Bradley would, in my opinion, get it. That's all.
According to the article, too, the writers originally left off Adonis Stevenson.
Really?
And why? Only like when enough backlash occurred that, like, what the hell are you doing, that they had to put him back on, which is astounding to me. He's probably a top 10 pound-for-pound guy now, and he's the undisputed number one at 175 in the world. Dateline Tempe, Arizona. Ryan Bader is undergoing surgery for a broken hand he sustained in his ass-whipping of Anthony Parash. He said the broken right hand was his reason for not getting the finish over Parash, apparently unaware that elbows are legal in the UFC and he's not fighting a Bellator quarterfinal bout.
He mentioned
that he'd like his next opponent. He's got no hands. He mentioned that he'd like his next opponent to be either Mauricio Shogun Hua or Phil Davis. Ben, who would you like Bader to fight next?
Before we go on, did they wrestle in college or no?
I think they did.
No, Phil wrestled at Penn State.
No, not together. I'm saying did they
against each other. I think they did. I think they were in the same weight class. I think they at least one.
Do you know who won?
Probably.
Do you know who they won? Do you know who won?
I want to say Davis.
I know you want to say Davis, but
everyone want to say Bader.
I know. Okay, so if I
Davis. Davis was a champion, if I remember correctly, so I would assume
they were both champs. It's just who champed more.
Yeah.
Who champed
more? Bader was okay.
Bader was
just All-American. I don't think he was ever.
He was a two-time.
I don't think he was a two-time champion. He was a two-time champion?
He was a two-time All-American, I think.
All-American. He was never a champion.
Who cares? This is about MMA. Carlos Vamil is the champion of Czechoslovakia or whatever.
Yeah, from ages 6 to 11. That was the best part. I laughed so hard when I found that out.
The best Bader ever made was fourth place.
Yeah. And that was his senior year, right?
No, Ben, it wasn't. So
okay.
Shut up.
Okay. Who would I rather see him face? I'd rather see him face...
Well, not between those two, but, you know, out of any...
In general...
The table's pretty much open right now for him.
Well, like you said, he's having surgery, so about how long before he comes back anyway? Months, right?
Yeah, it's a broken hand. Those recover pretty quickly.
Okay, so I would like to see him face, actually, if I had to pick one of those guys, I'd probably pick Shogun. You know, it's if he wants to stick... Listen, he's lost in the top 10 a couple of times, and if he wants to stay around, he's got to beat someone in the top 10 at this point. And Dan's typing something really, really, really insulting to me. I think that he needs to beat a name. So I think that matching up with Shogun's a really good idea because, A, if Shogun wins, you know, again, everyone's happy. You're all happy because I'll be sad. And if Bader wins, he's got a name on his resume that will keep him in the top 10 for a little bit. So I would like him to fight Shogun. It also would prove some things, whether he can handle a dangerous striker at this point. Like, you know, he needs to be able to handle those types of fighters, and I think that would be the best way to go.
You trust his chin against Shogun?
I trust his ability to hold Shogun down. I think he can hold Shogun down if he gets him down.
Connor?
Yeah, I like either of those two matchups. I think Shogun would be easier for Bader because I feel like it would kind of look like him versus Little Nog, which was a interesting fight in itself, but I feel like it would look like that. Shogun would get in his hits. Bader would probably take him out enough times to win a decision. I want to see him against Phil Davis, though. Because Davis is going to have... he's going to have matched wrestling, if not better wrestling, than Bader. and he transitions better standing up into the wrestling game than Bader does too. So I think there's an interesting clash there, and I want to see him against Davis over Shogun any day.
I actually like what you said there. Plus, Bader does have the power to kind of make Phil a little wary of just rushing in.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't want to pull a Bader, so.
Kaboom. Dan?
I mean, a fight with Shogun would be a change of pace. We'd finally have a fight that with Ryan Bader that people give a shit about. The deal with Ryan Bader is, the more I think about it, with Shogun, I don't want to see Shogun get knocked out. And I'm going to have to give Ben credit here because at this point in time, I'm not sure Shogun is Shogun of old, even though he went and ran through James Tahuna. I don't want to see him lose to Ryan Bader. That would really make Ben happy. What I would like to see is a new light heavyweight contender. And an interesting fight, I think, would be a fight against Rafael Cavalcante. Both guys stand and bang. They're talented strikers. They're on the rise. And you won't eliminate a real contender like Phil Davis or Shogun with that fight. And with the win, and it's likely that win will be pretty exciting with a knockout, you'll have a new guy in that mix. And Cavalcante doesn't have an opponent. So when both guys heal up, I like to see him fight Paige now.
Joshua. Tell you what, let's go to Earl.
Okay.
nice save there, Luke.
I think that was
smooth, my friend.
I think I would. I mean, I prefer to see him fight Phil Davis. Phil's an outstanding wrestler, and I think he's made his submission game complement that really nicely. I mean, dating back to like his submission of Bosch with something he just like completely pulled out of his ass. And I think, furthermore, I haven't seen Phil Davis really just, like, clown the bejesus out of a guy on the mat since he knocked Brian Stann clear down to the 185-pound division in his debut. So I'd really love to watch Phil Davis just wrestle the hell out of Ryan Bader for three rounds and just, you know, see if Bader can hang with it, because I don't think he can. I think Phil would put a clinic on him, and I'd like to see it.
Josh Hall.
I think the Davis fight makes the most sense, personally. I mean, Shogun, you could do that, but I don't see Shogun really that close to a rematch with Jones yet, and Davis is close. And I don't think it's not a knock on Bader, but Bader's basically the top 10 gatekeeper at this point. That's pretty much his role. And if you can use him to boost up somebody that is a good fighter, then Phil Davis will be very close to a new contender, and that's what the division needs, is a few new contenders. And if he can somehow beat Phil Davis, then he moves very close himself. So, I mean, it would be a great opportunity for him. I don't think he would be able to beat Davis. His wrestling is just miles ahead. But it's an interesting matchup, and it's a relevant matchup.
Bader needs to be paired with someone that's at his relative skill level that he can truly test himself against. Someone like Travis Fulton, I think, would be an interesting look for him. He would get to apply himself on a level that he has similar skill sets, similar power, similar ability to break through the UFC championship hunt.
For those of you that cannot see us right now, Ben Cohn has a look of pure disgust on his face.
And he should.
Is he drinking Martinelli's apple cider out of the flipping bottle? What the hell is that?
No, I believe that's Perrier.
It's Perrier.
For Ben, that's called for Ben, that's called the hard stuff.
Damn.
Okay. We have some jokes. I don't think Davis is going to work, only because Phil doesn't have an opponent and he hasn't fought in quite a while. You got to figure he's going to be ready to go ASAP. And by the time Bader's recovered from his broken hand, broken pillow. It's going to take a little while for him to kind of reset. Hear me out on this one by Bader. The Chael Vanderlei winner. Huh? Huh?
I was actually thinking about that.
I mean, it's a step up from Parosh, obviously. But, yeah, I just think, you know, Bader has an awesome one win in a row record. He doesn't need to be thrust into contention quite yet. And that means we get Shogun Nogueira 2. Which, hooray! Nolan?
Man, Shogun Nogueira 2 would be a sad fight these days. You know, like watching two mummies fight.
Yes.
Hey, it looks great. It was great when Henderson and Shogun did it. So.
Yeah, speaking of which, I'd like to see Henderson fight Ryan Bader.
You know, I like to see fight Mark Hunt next. Dan Henderson.
Yeah, I'd love to see Ryan Bader eat an H-bomb. Like to see Ryan Bader get pooped on by Jimmy Manuwa.
You got a creepy obsession with poop, you know that?
Like to see...
Nothing wrong with a man trying to stay regular.
Maybe Jimmy will get hurt, and then Bader will put himself in the Gustafson.
That's not how it works. Anyone that comes in contact with Jimmy gets hurt. Bader wouldn't even make it into the cage. He would just drop on the way out.
There's so many opportunities here. Fabio Maldonado in a boxing match. Just to get his feet wet for that future Roy Jones Jr.
That would actually be probably the best boxing opponent Maldonado would ever have faced in the ring.
Someone should have done the button.
Yeah, I like Henderson. As far as Henderson's, it's a somewhat relevant fight, and Henderson belongs nowhere near the title picture. Neither does Bader. So, it'd be fun. You get to see an H bomb, or you get to see Dan Henderson gently beaten and not hurt too bad in his old age.
Gently beaten.
Yeah, you know, it's like when a small child touches Santa Claus's beard to see if it's real. It's kind of like what that would be like.
It's like when people pat the grease off of their pizza.
I'd say that's that's a rough estimate about how powerful Ryan Bader is. He could knock out Anthony Parash, for God's sake.
Yeah, so he's here.
Like when you stroke your dead grandfather's hair at his funeral.
I wasn't allowed to go near the grave, you bastard.
Well, then you have more power than Ryan Bader, then, that's for sure.
It doesn't make any sense.
Then that fight will be like me tucking myself in at night.
You know, like in the shaving commercials when the guys are rubbing their face after they shave and they're like, fuck yeah, it's so smooth.
The one thing you can take solace in with Bader, though, is you know he hits just gently enough to knock out King Mo.
Yep.
I'm so tweeting this to Ryan Bader. And
more. We need more examples.
Each one of your houses.
You know how Macaulay Culkin splashes the aftershave on his cheeks? Oh, man.
That was the worst one.
Bring in the current references there.
That was the worst one out of all of them.
I'll take it. I'll accept it. Hey,
babe, that's all I see. Ryan Bader's like 4 day shadow.
It just and he blows the shit right off.
Ryan Bader hits with the velocity of dropping a feather off a roof.
He slaps his cheeks and he looks like one of the killed people in Joyride. R.I.P. Paul Walker.
Too much freaking time on this stupidity.
I want Twitter references to go into the night about things that would
that would KO Ryan Bader.
That would KO Ryan Bader.
I really, really want to see Ryan Bader knocked. Somebody you guys all like out.
I really want Ryan Bader to come on the show. That way when he puts his earbuds in his ears, he gets rocked and he's on Queer Street for the rest of the broadcast.
You know, if you get seasick on a boat, you need to put those little Dramamine stickers behind your ear.
Is this the second time that we're just like going to town on Ryan Bader?
Second time this team.
Well known fact, Ryan Bader was in intensive care after getting his ears pierced.
Guys, we should lighten up on Brian Bader. Something bad could happen to him on the way to the octagon. Like, you know, Bruce Buffer called the fight, the bell rings, and a wayward fly.
Did you guys know that when he's doing his walkout, they have extra security along the aisleway? That way, if one of those hat thieves reaches over, it doesn't pay anyone on the cage.
Ben, do you have a joke, Ben?
Do you have any stories about Ryan Bader's horrible chin or pillow fist, Ben?
I can't stop laughing.
I did hear a couple of weeks ago that he got a flashback to the Machida knockout, knocked himself out, dropped.
Bader stopped. When he fastens a snapback hat, he loses hearing in his left ear.
Oh, God. I heard he was walking along the beach and a pigeon shit on him, and then he got knocked out.
That a boy, Ben.
That's the spirit. When he goes to listen to your voicemail about how mean we're going to be, he's going to put the phone up to his ear and get knocked the fuck out and stanky leg wherever he's standing.
Ryan Bader got a snowball fight with his kid. His kid won.
I hear Ryan Bader was in the scene where the kid goes over to Tony Stark and asks how he gets out of the wormhole and just knocks out. The kid's whisper knocking out.
Wow. Somebody just opened a door. Bader just got knocked out.
That's the end of that. That's the end of that fun. Thanks, Ben.
Oh, God, that was the best.
Even Ben killed the jokes. That's sad.
It was self-sabotage.
He kills my joy every week, twice a week.
Ben strapped 2 tons of dynamite to his chest and ran in the middle of our jokes.
Coincidentally, Ryan Bader was a mile away, got hit with
a... Oh, man, that's funny again.
He felt the vibration from the explosion.
Oh, literal Josh.
Dateline.
Not you.
Oh, man, I got the papers, you guys. Holy shit.
I think we should keep this.
Ryan Bader's toughest opponent was a Q-tip.
Okay. Huh.
Dateline, Sacramento, California. Looking forward to the UFC on Fox 2. We'll do quick picks here for the prelims, and feel free to throw out a few words on the main card. We will go left to right, your left to my right. In the flyweight division, Alptekin Özkılıç against Darren Uyanoyama. Starting from my left, working towards the right.
Ben, I know you want to kill yourself because you just crack jokes about Ryan Bader, but...
Oh my God, joking about Ryan Bader being knocked out.
I'm not on your left at all.
Well, no, Ben, in the new setup, everyone's on their right. Been doing this for weeks.
I'm not even like on your right for Nolan.
The reverb from the Bader knockout has been locked right now.
No,
Ben's woozy.
Ben just heard.
Okay. You know Ben, the alphabet, right?
B comes before C.
Okay.
Make your pick, you A.
Ryan Bader. Move along. Ryan Bader.
Picking Ryan Bader for a flyweight division. I'm not saying who's going to get. I'm not asking who's going to get knocked out if the three of them fought. I'm asking your picks for the fight.
Darren by submission.
I'm going to go with Darren as well because his name is easier to pronounce.
Uyanoyama.
Sure.
Not really.
Yeah, two dudes that keep Brian Bader awake at night. I'd have to take Uyanoyama, and I won't say it too loud, so, you know, keep, you know, I got Ryan Bader in mind.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the other dude. What's his face?
Özkılıç.
There you go.
That's a strong play there. The other guy. I'll take Uyanoyama.
Uyanoyama for me.
Uyanoyama.
In the lightweight division, Abel Trujillo against Roger Bowling.
I'm going to go with Bowling.
I'm going to go with Trujillo.
Two guys that can knock out Ryan Bader.
That's
good. I'm gonna take Chiodillo on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trujillo could knock out Ryan Bader if he dressed like a woman, because he's a woman-beating piece of shit. So I'm going to go with bowling.
Actually, Ryan Bader dressed up like a woman for one Halloween, so it's perfect.
That's probably why he made that joke, then.
This podcast just had its own very special moment.
The more you know.
Bowling. Fuck Trujillo.
He's back in the bicycle shop garage again.
Earl, I love your apology to Ryan Bader.
Picking bowling.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Unfortunately, Trujillo.
In the lightweight division, Cody McKenzie versus Sam Stout.
Speaking of people that can knock out Ryan Bader.
Cody McKenzie!
Ben's gonna fucking blow his brains out while we're live.
Great. Well, the first ever MMA podcast on Live League. Can't wait.
Anyway, Ryan Stout.
I'm gonna go with Stout.
For all this shit people talk about the prelims, the UFC cards, once again, another fucking fight with people that can knock out Ryan Bader. I'm going to have to take Sam Stout.
Yeah, Sam Stout's going to get his second ever KO, which is something very impressive for one who has hands of stone.
McKenzie by guillotine, because TC isn't here to play the contrarian.
Stout, and I will enjoy it tremendously.
Cody McKenzie is a giant chode.
In the flyweight division, Scott Jorgensen against Zach Makovsky.
Zach Makovsky, definitely. No question.
I think this deserves a couple words, so I'm just going to say it. This is the first time Jorgensen's dropped the 125, and I think that'll hinder him in this fight, so I'm going to pick Makovsky.
I don't mean to beat an unconscious light heavyweight, but both of these fighters could indeed knock out Ryan Bader. And, I like Scott Jorgensen in this one. I know Makovsky's got some stock rising. But Jorgensen, I like Jorgensen in this one.
Yeah, I would give Makovsky a little bit more credit in this situation, because I know Jorgensen's going to 125 for the first time, but Makovsky's taking this on super short notice. I think Jorgensen's going to beat him. It'll be a competitive first half, I think. But, I mean, in reality, anything that gives Zach Makovsky in the UFC at this point, I'm perfectly fine with. So
he is coming off a fight pretty recently, so he's still going to be in shape. He's going to be in shape for a fight.
Yeah, I'm thrilled they brought Makovsky over, but I think Scotty's a tough matchup for him. So I'm going to go Scotty.
Makovsky.
Scotty's been improving in his past couple fights. He actually stood up very well against Uriah Faber, who's a decent striker. And I think he'll outlast Makovsky and win.
In the lightweight division, Bobby Green versus Pat Healy.
I'm going to go with Healy by grinding decision.
Yeah, I'm rolling with Healy as well.
Two guys in the lightweight division. They could also knock out Ryan Bader.
Jesus Christ.
And I like Bobby Green in this one.
By dick kick?
Yeah. Powerful enough to knock out Ryan Bader.
That horse is so dead. It's a bag of kibble right now, dude.
Yo, I don't know what
I'm gonna go with Pat Healy, and he is going to get his first win in the UFC that will actually stick.
Yeah, I think Healy's miles ahead of him. I think he's gonna win this fight handily.
Healy.
Love Bobby Green, but Healy.
In the lightweight division, Danny Castillo versus Edson Barboza.
Gonna pick the grinding wrestler again, Castillo.
I'm gonna pick Castillo via not improved striking.
I think this is the fight with Danny Castillo makes a jump from undercard superstar to holy crap, this guy's a legit lightweight. And also, they can both beat knockout Ryan Bader. Strike out there.
I almost like Luke's yin a little more than this. Almost. It's getting that beat.
For this one, I know that Castillo has the wrestling or whatever, but I'm not going to pick against Edson Barbosa ever because he's amazing. So Barbosa is going to kick the shit out of him.
I mean, but he kind of has the same similar
Ben,
style.
Be quiet.
He is going to kick the shit out of him.
Okay.
I'm super serious.
You're super serial.
As much as I hope that Earl is correct, I think that this is an awful matchup for him. Castillo's not a really high-profile guy, but he's the exact kind of fighter that Barbosa struggles with. I think Castillo grinds out a decision.
I think Barbosa catches him before Castillo can get him down, so I'm going with Barbosa.
Castillo had troubles against Anthony Njikawani, who's a similar striker in a sense of... I see Barbosa taking this pretty easily, honestly. Castillo's too confident on his feet for training with Mayweather, and yeah, he sucks.
In the welterweight division, Court McGee against Ryan LaFlair. The correct answer is nobody. Nobody
yeah,
wins in this fight.
No, but I mean, Court's hard to get down. LaFlair's a good wrestler. Court McGee by volume striking.
Court McGee via Chuck Liddell special.
Definitely.
Okay, what is the Chuck Liddell special? Getting knocked out even easier than Ryan Bader somehow?
No.
Here it comes. Hold on, guys.
No contest. Oh, and Earl, hold up one second. I'd like to mention the fact that both these guys could indeed knock out Ryan Bader.
We're never going to be able to do this again, Dan, and I hope you feel really bad about it.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I'm going to go with Court McGee via, you know, the pit elevated cardio's volume striking decision.
Yeah, Court McGee by being the 50-pound larger version of Dominic Cruz.
McGee?
McGee, easily.
Is that the first one that we're all unanimous on?
Dan said no contest.
Oh, well, shut up.
Now the main card on Fox. In the lightweight division, Joe Lozon versus Mac Danzig.
Lozon, Danzig's kind of done at this point, and Lozon's still got enough left in the tank, I think, to get the win.
Does he? Did you see that last fight?
I would say the other way around, if anything, better.
Did you see Danzig's last fight?
Well, they both looked terrible.
Well, yeah, but one got finished. Bad.
I'll take someone who got finished bad over someone who just looked like he was dead for 15 minutes.
Yeah, like that's kind of how I'm approaching it, too. I'm really scared that Lozon's not going to be able to do much, but I love the guy, so I'm actually going to say that he pulls a flying heel hook out and wins it.
I like Joe Lozon in this fight.
Quick, Earl, before you can say anything else, my God.
I am going to – I'm, you know, honestly, I'm – like, for some weird reason, I'm kind of a homer for Mac Danzig. And, I mean, maybe it was just how he picked off Joe Stevenson, you know, hell if I know. But I think Lozon's decline is rapid. It's in full free fall mode right now. So I'm going to take Mac Danzig.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with Lozon. Just because I think that they are probably both in decline right now, and he was the better fighter to start with. But if he looks like he did in that last fight, he's going to lose. I think that Mac Danzig beats the Lozon that we saw last time out, but I'm hoping that was just more of an aberration than a sign that he's just shot as a fighter.
I really like Joe, and I'm picking him. I'm not picking him, but I'm rooting for him. But I can't get over how awful he looked in that fight, man. And it's been kind of a long time. I mean, he was game against Jim Miller, but he didn't really do anything. He just got the hell beaten out of him for three rounds. I don't want to say Lozon shot. I just think that his style and the beatings that he's taken over the years and survived from might be taking their toll. I'm going to go with Danzig here.
This will be a comeback fight for Lozon. I think he has a couple more left in him, and Mac Danzig sucks really bad, so Lozon's going to win.
In the featherweight division, Chad Mendez against Nick Lentz.
Mendez by murder, death kill in the first round.
So you mean unanimous decision?
No, I mean murder, death kill in the first round.
I don't understand what that means. Striking. Does that mean he actually wins via improved striking?
Is he going to throw salt in his eyes like Mr. Fuji?
You didn't realize he'd wait until the end.
Or he's going to throw stuff out of the urn like Paul Bearer.
I'm going to pick Chad Mendez as well. I think if he doesn't finish Nick Lentz, I definitely see him just putting a straight-on beating, like a three-round, worse than Bader Parash beating. Because, never mind, I was going to say something bad there. So that's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah, we've gotten the trend of Chad Mendez fighting guys that he just absolutely runs through. Nick Lentz is definitely a real challenger for him, but I'm so high on Chad Mendez. I think he might be one of the, I think he's the honorary John Fitch of his division.
Question: why do you think that he's a real challenge for Mendez?
Nick Lentz is legit. Okay, Nick Lentz, because of his fight style, because he's been just killed on the undercard, he's got a solid clinch game, a solid wrestling game, his jiu-jitsu's all right.
But it's nothing compared to Mendez, and that's his strength.
But has Mendez ever really faced a top wrestler?
Clay Guida.
Omagawa.
He's the king of smothering.
Yeah, but if you compare Lentz to all his past opponents that he hasn't lost to, I mean, how many of them would you say?
Also, Elkins. Elkins also. He's a smothering submission grappler with good wrestling. These are actually the guys who Mendez always kicks the crap out of.
Okay, these are fighters that are superior to Ryan Bader, so it doesn't matter. I consider this
Max.
A close contest.
I'm going to go with Chad Mendez. I don't think he's going to finish Lentz. I mean, Chad Mendez is going to handle this. It's going to be dominant, but I don't think he'll be able to get the finish.
Lentz is such a tough dude, but God, Mendez is an awful matchup for him. Him finally getting his break to fight, you know, a pretty top-level guy, he got probably the worst matchup aside from the champion in the division for him. Everything he does well, Mendez does better, and he's just sharp right now, so I've got to take Mendez.
Chad Mendez by knockout. He's the number two featherweight in the world, and he is deserving of another shot against Aldo, the way he keeps running through people.
Chad Money Shot Mendez.
Original WEC nickname alert.
Do you think they're going to give him the title shot if he beats Lentz or no?
They should give him the title shot if he changes his nickname back to Money Shot.
He should fight for the heavyweight championship.
He should, if he wants to get a title shot, he should change his nickname to Chad Anthony Pettis Frankie Edgar Mendez, and then he'll definitely get a title shot.
And a rematch of that title shot, and then another rematch.
I think Chad Showtime the Answer Mendez.
Showtime the Answer.
Yeah, Frankie Edgar sucks.
Whoa. Okay, let's just back up that trolley a few blocks.
That was Nolan Howe, listeners.
Of course.
Saying that ridiculous thing.
In the bantamweight division, Michael McDonald versus Uriah Faber.
Oh, this is such a great fight. Oh, man.
Faber will probably take advantage of Michael's inexperience here. I think they'll be about even. Faber has a pretty good chin still. I think he'll be able to get him down to the ground and out and grind him for a decision win.
I'm going back and forth on this fight because I feel like McDonald could literally just land that one shot and
yeah,
and make Uriah Faber see God. But
like, I love that little subtle thing. That was nice.
And so I think that could happen, but I really want to see Uriah Faber come out and I want to see them throw down, have a really good fight, and I kind of feel like Faber will finish this during a scramble later on. And I know that McDonald has, you know, sick skills in scrambling. I mean, that's how he got a hold of Pickett in his last fight. But I feel like Uriah has a better grasp of that, and I think that it's going to come down to scrambling, and he's going to grab something and win via submission.
Guillotine, probably.
Right, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, the top two fights in this card are just insanely close. I've gone back and forth like you have, and I'm staying with Faber just because, A, I think it's going to be a team alpha male kind of night. It's one of those weird things. Dwayne Ludwig's like been the best trainer of this year, and this card could validate that. And, you know, I think we're heading to Faber getting his 17th title shot, so... I mean, seriously, does he not get the title shot with the win here? And it's
I think
crazy.
He gets a. I think he gets a title shot if Donna Cruz gets his title back.
Yeah,
I think he will. They'll set up the trilogy fight if Donna Cruz wins. If he loses, I don't think they're going to give him another title shot because Morrell just completely dominated him.
Yeah, I'm going to go. You know, I really think that Faber's hands are going to surprise people in this fight. I think that McDonald's like just absurdly talented, but I think that even still at this stage of the game, Faber still got the edge on him. He's got this hometown fight. It's a, you know, it's a big thing for him. It's like old WEC days out there. So I'm going to go with Uriah Faber. He's going to drop him and then submit him with a rear naked choke in the second round.
Has McDonald ever been dropped? I know he has a really solid chin.
I don't know offhand.
Maybe Chris Carioca dropped him. I can't really remember.
But I know, I'm just saying, like, I'm pretty sure he's been hit hard and he's, like, just eaten up.
The Edwin Figueroa fight?
If you're getting cracked by Edwin Figueroa.
Well, how long ago was that? That was a long time ago.
Not that long
ago. So, the thing that worries me about Faber is that Jorgensen was getting beaten up for two rounds, and then in the third, he was kind of like landing really well on Faber. That's what worries me because Jorgensen's really not a great striker by any means.
He had Johnny Hendricks in his corner.
Who, Jorgensen?
See, because he coasted in the last round.
We should take.
Oh,
you see, Ben, Johnny Hendricks fought George St. Pierre in the UFC Welterweight Championship. And had the fight in the bag, and then in the fifth round, he took the... We'll talk later.
Strangely enough, only one of them could finish Ryan Bader.
Misha Tate.
Misha.
Who are we up to?
Josh.
We're up to me. I love this fight so much. And, I mean, it's the classic, you know, the old guard trying to fend off the new guard. And if this fight was a year or two later, I would take McDonald and not even consider it. But, man, Faber's still at the top of his game, and he's just a tough out for anybody.
Dude, he's still good, man.
He is. He's still so good. He has not lost a step. And I don't think either one of them is going to get the finish here. But they're both fully capable of it. But I just think they're both so tough, you're going to see a really close decision, and Faber's going to eke it out.
This fight makes my shorts feel funny. I am absolutely looking forward to this fight since McDonald got his last win, and it was even implied that it could be a possibility. There are two Uriah Fabers, though. There is the one in title fights, and there's the one in non-title fights. The one in title fights is a little slow, a little cautious, a little plodding. The one who is in non-title fights is Beef Mo. I got to go with Beef Mo Faber on this one here. It's a little bit too much for McDonald yet. You know, he's not going to throw anything at Faber that Faber hasn't seen already. Michael McDonald's one of my favorite fighters on the planet, and he's got a ridiculous future ahead of him. I just think right now, and especially, like I said, Faber has just looked like a monster in fights where he's not fighting for a title. I think that's the way to go right now. And Josh is right. If this fight happens in a year, 2 years, 3 years, it's McDonald. But Faber still got a lot. I thought he might have been done after the last title fight, but, man, the way he's rebounded and just tearing through people, there's a lot of gas left in that tank.
I hate Uriah Faber just for the fact that, like, I just kind of want him to go away. I'm tired of him getting title shots. Loved him in the WEC, but his novelty is worn out since then. For that, I'll take McDonald. I actually think Faber has lost a couple of steps, but the gulf between him and the rest of the bantamweight division was so wide that it's still a pretty fair margin that he beats everybody else. It showed in the Jorgensen fight, for example. Alcantara was a favorable matchup for him. I'm going to pick McDonald to win because picking Uriah Faber is what a fool believes, and Yamo be there when Michael McDonald knocks out Uriah Faber.
In your main event of the evening for the UFC Flyweight Championship, Demetrius Johnson defends against Joseph Benavidez.
I'm honestly still not sure on this one. I'm still writing the breakdown, but Johnson is just so good at winning fights. Whatever the situation is, if he's at a disadvantage striking, he'll take you down if he could. If he's at a disadvantage on the ground, he'll find a way to keep it standing. You know, and what displayed that to me was in the first fight with Benavidez. He was out striking for the first two rounds, and when he got dropped, he started shooting for takedowns, and he was able to get him down. And that's a big deal because Johnson was able to get him down 5 times. Because Benavidez was 0-7. I think that's a big deal. Because now Benavidez is improved striking, which it really is. I completely am eating all the crow in the world right now because Benavidez's striking has improved a ton since being with Bang Ludwig. He's no longer only those awkward punches from weird angles. He has some very nice straight fist punches to throw in there as well. He's mixing in his kicks phenomenally well, especially in his fight with Formiga. So I think Benavidez is definitely going to be able to do better on the feet and handle Johnson's speed more easily. But I still think Johnson has the advantage and the ability to take him down, where Benavidez has already shown that he can't. So I'm still going to pick Johnson because he's also his amazing recovery abilities. Better than GSP's, in my opinion.
I rewatched their first title fight a couple days ago, and I was literally astounded that it was a split decision. I don't know how the hell that happened, because to me it was a clear 49-46 in favor of Johnson. I don't see how anyone could, you know, see Benavidez winning that. And I think the interesting thing going into this is how much has Benavidez improved since that fight? Because we've seen Johnson go out and dominate a guy after getting dropped and rocked a few times. And we've also seen him go out and dominate a guy and finish him. So I'm a little interested. I feel like Benavidez is going to improve enough to take this. But, man, like, I still feel like Mighty Mouse just has that indomitable will to win. I'm going to pick Benavidez, but I would not be surprised to see Johnson take this.
Yeah, I think, first off, I think Joseph Benavidez is the number one example of Dwayne Ludwig's impact at Team Alpha Male. If you just look at how good he's looked since the Demetrius Johnson fight, it's crazy to say a guy's improved that much since competing for the Flyweight Championship. And I think when we're done with this fight, we might end up complaining about the judging scoring system again, because the way Demetrius Johnson wins fights, and he does it so well, is his footwork's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. At flyweight, the difference between him at a speed level and the majority of guys is amazing. He's able to win rounds close. He's able to frustrate fighters. They end up chasing him. They end up in poor positions on the feet. So I think Demetrius Johnson could certainly eke out rounds. With that being said, I do have kind of a weird feeling that Joseph Benavidez catches Johnson late in the fight, rocks him, and locks in a submission. And one last important note is the last 10 fighters I've talked about, we all knocked out Ryan Bader. Thank you. Mic drop. Thank you, Connor. I get that off my chest.
I think
– don't like you right now. I really don't like you right now.
All you guys, it'll be okay.
Shut up.
I think when I think about this fight, one thing that kind of stuck out to me in the interviews on one of the preview shows was that Benavidez is still kind of running this game about Demetrius just fighting to win rounds, and he's not finisher, and he's not this, and he's that. But the Moraga fight absolutely proved that to be just a complete falsehood, because Demetrius was absolutely flat out dominating that fight, had it in the bag, and still went and got one of the few fifth round submissions in UFC history. He didn't need it. He absolutely could have coasted it and survived the coasting, unlike Johnny Hendricks could have. So, you know, it's that narrative to me is dead. It's silly, and it shows something that he's not really taking on. He's not going to fight, in his mind, the Demetrius Johnson of today. He's fighting Demetrius Johnson back then. And I don't think that's going to pan out well for him. I think Demetrius Johnson takes it. I don't think he's going to eke out rounds. I think he's going to flat out dominate rounds.
What really impressed me about what you just commented on, it was perfect. Remember when in the fourth round, Matt Hume told him to switch to that armbar, and he listened to him. And that was one of the most impressive things, because you see coaches, go, they'll tell their fighters stuff, and they will not do it. The majority of fighters will just go out and do whatever the hell they were doing in the previous rounds, what was working. And he was clearly dominating, as you said, but he still listened to his coach and did exactly what he said, and he got the finish. And that's what really impressed me. So that's what also he has an advantage of that, because we know that he'll listen to his coach. That's a big deal.
Josh.
Okay, yeah, I'll go with DJ here. He's just so, so good. I mean, Benavidez is really, really good too, but I think that Demetrius just has little, small, incremental advantages over him in most of the facets, aside from, like, power striking. And I think he's evasive enough to where that won't become an issue, and he will win a decision, maybe 49-46.
As far as these two go, as I've said, it's in the flyweight division, it's Demetrius Johnson, it's Joseph Benavidez, and there's everybody else. This fight will not be finished. They're both too smart, and they're both, you know, they're not going to make a mistake to let that happen. And neither of them really have one shot stopping power anyway. Benavidez is close, but DJ's not going to let that happen. I think this goes similar to their first fight. I think Demetrius just works Benavidez on the feet and is just too fast for even Joe Benavidez to compete with. I think DJ takes a decision.
Yeah, I think this looks like every Mighty Mouse fight where he gets rocked or hit pretty well by his opponent, and he's some trouble, but he ultimately wins every round. I could see it even be more dominant in this case. I don't think Benavidez is fast enough for him. Just a matter of explosiveness and athleticism here, and Johnson's got those on his side, and it's probably the actual literal application of the word. He is ridiculously fast. I haven't seen anybody just spring in the takedowns like that fast and get the guy on the mat so quickly. So I think he's going to do that for five rounds, and he might even pull something off in the fifth. But Benavidez is too tough, so I'll take Mighty Mouse's decision.
Lastly, who wins in a fight? Morris Day and Prince against Simon and Garfunkel.
Oh, shit, dude.
And the time cannot be cage side.
No run-ins from the time.
Have you seen Prince play basketball? The man is an athlete.
Yeah. I'm going with Prince, man.
Prince.
Nolan?
You can't even ask me that. I'm more State's biggest fan.
Blouses.
Morris State's going to walk into the cage, and Jerome's going to hold the mirror for him at the Cape Side checkpoint. He's going to do his hair, walk in with his pimp cane, and smack Garfunkel's afro off his head.
Morris State's biggest fan is a 19-year-old shut-in from Virginia. Exactly what he strived for in his career, I believe.
He's finally made it.
I'm the only person who can still do the bird.
Oh, my God. And thankfully, that will end it for us tonight. We'll be back next week recapping the weekend in action. And hopefully, Ben will still be our friend.
And alive. That's the biggest thing.
We will catch you guys next week.
Ow!